Welcome to Casa de Cambio, collaborating with
Change It. I'm thrilled to be with you today. Here we go.
Let's I'm so excited for this because we've been talking about it for a while and it's finally happening.
you've got both voices in one room, guys.
yeah, on the same podcast at the same time on both of our podcast channels. So we today are going to talk about how to level up in change and how to level up your change game. But as you know, there are some questions I ask every guest who comes on to Casa de Cambio podcast before we get into that. So may I ask you, Elle, the first question, what are you currently watching, reading or listening to?
I am reading something incredibly heavy, which is Jim Collins' Good to Great. And that's because I set up a company at the start of this year and it's about how companies survive and basically go from being good to great. I would love to say I'm reading something more colourful, Tash, but it's brilliant and it's all about good leadership and how to kind of scale and what to think about and the foundations of a company.
Great, great. And what was the best piece of career advice you ever received?
So I've been thinking on this one because I thought you might ask. It's actually something my MD once said to me, which was, so there were two things. She didn't say this one, which was when I was very early in my career, I got told to always wear heels, which is an interesting one, which I took forward and kind of refuted and refused to do. But my MD, kind of on that, because I spoke to her about being told this, once said to me, don't shy away from your sensitivity. It's a fierce power. And I think that was a massive turning point for me in my career because I'd always been really like, I'm a sensitive person, and always apologizing for it. And she actually said just to lean into it. And then you connect with people.
Like, yeah.
You're sensitive too.
No, that's great advice. Re the heels thing. I had an idea in my head when I was younger and entering the workforce that I had to wear heels too. I don't remember anyone explicitly telling me, but I thought that was something I had to do and I was wearing heels, but we haven't met in person. So I'm quite tall and I was wearing heels around the office and men started telling me you shouldn't wear heels. Stop wearing heels. Obviously, because I was taller than them and they were intimidated and butthurt by it. But I took it. I was like, oh, you're telling me not to wear heels? I'm going to wear my highest heel anytime I have a meeting with you. So I will be 6'6". Towering over you. And like, obviously we've had the pandemic now and, you know, the whole dress and sneakers look is in and I've got buggered knees from playing too much netball. So I don't do it anymore. But I remember thinking, I don't need unsolicited advice on what I should and shouldn't be wearing in the office from anyone, but particularly from men. But it's interesting that we've had, different experiences.
Yeah, the same piece of advice but in different in different ways. Backwards, completely the opposite. I find it like fascinating that people do still comment on, well, feel more comfortable. They say that this in sports, that athletes, particularly female ones, get comments about what to wear and what not to wear. Like in the women's football, it was all around their style or how they looked.
I think it's a microaggression. It's a misogynist micro, because I've also had a lot of women decide they want to tell me what I should and shouldn't wear in the office. And I've always thought, I look nice and I'm wearing nice clothes and I've got my heels on. So it was surprising when people think, they need to tell you this or that, which I think, are men being told that? I don't think so. It's an interesting, it's also interesting because I noticed since I got a little bit older, it stopped happening. So it seems to happen a lot to when you're younger that people think, I don't know, you can be pushed around or molded. And if someone tried to do that to me now, I'd be like, no. I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. I'm interested to see what happens next. Dress codes are much more fluid and.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right.
So it's a different work landscape. Like when I first entered the workforce, it was very, I don't know, people were very much about controlling other people through whatever means they could. And if dress standards or something that was written in a dress code, like you can see me, I've got nose rings. And I had some people say, oh, can you take out your nose ring? I'd be like, no. Nope, don't want to.
Don't want to work here either.
Red flag. Red flag. Anyway, we could talk about this for a while, but let's get on to the podcast topic, which is leveling up and change.
Leveling up. This is one that comes up for me all the time, particularly from contractors in change. So I'm really, really excited to get your insights on, your kind of experience of this, because I think the leveling up and change is particularly difficult because there's so many layers, right? It's difficult in any profession, but there's lots of different names around as well. And sometimes it's working out which is which, but how do you make that leap from analyst to manager? So can't wait.
Manager to senior manager. I've got some ideas. I have a list. So I think the first one that's on my list, the first couple are try and take some varied roles. So things like different types of projects and different industries. And also if you can, and I would caveat, I know, you know, we're in November. Oh my God. November 2023. It's the 7th of November. It's been a whole week. Oops. I'm not ready for the end of the year. November 23, like we know the market's been a bit funny this year in Australia, but if you can get onto a big transformation program, then you'll have the opportunity to work with other more experienced and more senior people. But yeah, I think, and again, like if you are in a period like we're in at the moment where maybe there's not lots of huge transformations kicking off that are going to require large change teams, maybe you can think about like what other industries could you work in or what types of projects could you work in to round out your CV? Because if you think about all the different streams of change management, you know, where we tend to work, you've got new operating model and organizational design, you've got culture change, you've got strategic and disruptive change, you've got your, you know, system implementations and digital transformation. Yeah. So like, are you ticking off all of these different types of changes, agile transformation, agile ways of working, or working in an agile environment. So yeah, what can you tick off in terms of types of change that might help you make you a more well-rounded candidate or industries?
Exactly right. I think that's really good advice because I think people often particularly in their early change career, think that they might need to specialize early, find their thing, but you can be playful, right? Yeah. You can try things and find out what you lean into, like what you're naturally kind of more aligned to as well. So actually you're saying to try the different types of change, round out before you decide, I'm going to specialize in this one, rather than landing in tech change and being like, I'm going to do tech change forever.
I mean, you can do what you want. Like it's your life, it's your career. And if you found something that you've fallen into and you absolutely love it and you don't see any need to go and do culture change, if you're working like that, that's absolutely fine. But I think in terms of, you know, making yourself as employable as you can be, like somebody who's got all of these different types of change programs, then you can work on any of those types of change programs and the industry ebbs and flows. So I know when I first moved to Melbourne, you know, at the like end of 2008, beginning of 2009, like all the work was in big tech transformations and like there was some pretty big ERP implementations going on. So that's where I was working. And then, you know, a few years ago, we had a number of large companies kicking off agile transformations. So that was a very hot topic. So I mean, yes, you can decide to do what you want, but why would you limit yourself that way, especially if you're early in your career? Because I think the more junior you are, the easier it's going to be to kind of, you know, move around because people will see your transferable skills. But I mean, we were talking about this before we hit record. The more senior you are, the more they do want you to tick every single box and have like the very specific type of change experience, whether it's M&A or... So, but I think if you're an analyst or a manager, it is easier to kind of move around and do different things. So yeah, I probably am saying do it earlier in your career.
I mean, that was, you were trying to be Switzerland there, weren't you?
Yeah.
I think it's sound advice because I think, particularly in the market at the moment, more than ever, we are seeing this onus on, okay, yeah, I want you to come and do tech change, but I also want you to do this change over here. And actually, have you done culture and HR change? And that holistic skill set will just mean that you ought to tick every single box.
Correct.
And there's something in, I think it's Tim Ferriss, says about ultimately doing the thing that you fear the most. So like if you're in financial services and you're aware that you've been in financial services for a good stint now, and it's terrifying thinking about, say, going into government or utilities or one of these different industries, do it. That's because you need to, right? There's learning in that space.
Yeah, I did that. Because I was earlier in my career when I first got here and first started contracting, I was like going back and forth between NAB and ANZ, which are the two major banks located in Melbourne. And they have, you know, a lot of projects and they have big change practices. So of course, like if any change person in Melbourne has probably worked at those two places, like it's not that hard to fathom. But I was thinking, am I becoming too bankified or too embedded into financial services? Like I think I should try and get something outside of financial services. So I went to Telstra. And then I went around to, you know, from Telstra, I went to, you know, transport, supply chain, Australia Post. So what is that? Mail, supply chain, whatever we, you know, logistics. Yeah. And, you know, lots of other companies and really broadened my horizons. And I do see that when people have been with one organization or in one industry for a long time. They can be worried to step out of it. And there are differences in industries. And, you know, one thing that's coming to mind in particular is I think banking is very, they do value change. They have well-established change practices and it's pretty stock standard to get your change manager in. And, you know, obviously I'm not saying it's perfect, but like it's part of the way they do things to just get change involved, whereas a lot of other industries and organizations can be change immature and you can be by yourself and you don't have the support of a big network of other change practitioners. So it is different, but
educating
again, that's good for you.
Role of change.
Yeah. Yeah.
It comes up in those briefs a lot, doesn't it? Have you educated on the role of change?
Yeah. And you know, that is another thing that probably will help make you more well-rounded is, can you be a change manager by yourself doing all the things, or can you only be a change resource in a very highly structured hierarchical environment where all the tools and templates are provided and you're kind of just following that, you know, process that's been laid out in front of you? Or can you be creative and can you tailor things to an organization? That's often something people want to see.
What else is on your list?
Yeah, I'm having a look. So yeah, we talked about a little, we touched on working with people you can learn from, but if you have the opportunity to work with someone, you know, who you've admired or you've heard about being really good, like go do that because you will learn a lot. And also putting yourself out there publicly. So making sure your LinkedIn is up to date and looking really good and you have a really good blurb, because if you have an out of date, not like kind of meh LinkedIn, again, like everyone's looking at your LinkedIn, and a lot of people, when they need specific things, they'll do a search on, like, you know, change analyst Salesforce, and they'll see. So you want to be coming up in people's searches, because I have gotten roles from people just DMing me on LinkedIn before.
As much as we
hate the cold copy paste emails, like there are people out there who are trying to hire. So that's, and even like sharing things and, you know, starting to go to events and trying to build your network of connections so that when you are ready to make that leap for the next role, you've got a really, really strong network out there, because too many people just don't work that muscle.
Yeah. And I think it's, I think it's twofold, right? Those are people that you can lean on, but also they're part of your tribe. Like these people can be mentors. They can also just be really good social friends. So I think that's really good advice. Tell me, linking that back to your piece about working with good people, are you talking about a mentor above you there, Tash, or someone in the program, like having a good change sponsor?
It could mean a lot of things. It could mean a well-known head of change, or you could be working with a gun senior change manager or change lead. Like that's always very exciting. And, you know, I think I told you when we, you know, before we hit record on the podcast as well, earlier in my career, I was by myself as the sole change resource on projects. And, you know, I would have loved to have someone else around who was more experienced than me and could, you know, show me how to do things a bit better. Cause I feel like that would have really sped up my development. I was working a lot of stuff out on my own, and, you know, I hate to sound like a boomer, but back in my day, we didn't have podcasts and, you know, people posting stuff on social media that I could just go and follow. Like, it was a different landscape. So that wasn't a way for me to get info either. Now we have all these fabulous podcasts like Change It and Casa de Cambio. But yeah, so I do really feel like that was something I could have benefited from immensely. And then it's not just change people. So it could also be, is this a project where I'm going to learn a highly marketable skill? Like, this could be a cloud implementation. It could be a CRM transformation. It could be so is it something that's, again, it's going to add another feather to my cap in terms of skills that I've learned? Because yeah, if you've never done a CRM before, go do a Salesforce implementation if they'll have you. So I would be looking at that, and then also be looking at, well, have I been mainly stuck in waterfall environments and I have the opportunity to go and work in an environment that's using agile ways of working? Because then you can, you know, a lot of people are wanting change managers specifically who have got solid experience in agile environments now. So you got to think about, yeah, what are some skills that I don't have? Because if you have, even if you're not learning from a person, you will have the opportunity to learn from that industry or that particular organization, or yeah, like even some fantastic agile people. But yeah, I would look at people, industry, technical skills, because there's so much there that, you know, you can look at and go, I haven't done this, I'm going to do this, and just keep adding and adding and adding. What do you think about training and certifications as somebody who recruits people? And, you know, you obviously talk to probably more people than I do who are trying to level up and get into their next role. So what's your thoughts on training and certifications?
This one comes up all the time. Yeah. Like, I would be a dime. I'm going old school. I think as a career entrant or changer, like someone that is coming in to change from another profession, then ProSci is a good process, right? There's also the APMG. You could, you know, if you've got the time and all the money, then doing a degree in change is brilliant. All of those things I don't refute. I, at the risk of also being Switzerland, feel like the piece that I really really am an ambassador for more than anything now is experience. Like, if you're going to do
transferable skills.
If you're going to do ProSci or if you're going to do APMG, make sure you then do some work experience. Make sure you, to your point, work with a mentor, work with a head of change, and try and apply it. Like, I know Delta Metcash, actually, Jane has got a brilliant course about applying the learning.
She's great.
Where it's really hands-on. And I think that those kind of courses, I think that's like $250.
Yeah.
Amazing. So there are some other tools now outside of those kind of $5,000 investments, because I think that is what's, or can be quite terrifying for people. And it can be a barrier to entry, right? Not everyone's got $5,000 in their account. The other thing is, a lot of organizations train you up on that. You might get that training in there. And then one more piece on this, because it is my bugbear, is that the training doesn't stop, Tash. And I think that you really walk that walk too. Continual learning will help you progress, and being curious in change will help you, not only when you're looking at leveling up, but I just think in terms of being a leader in your profession, you know, just be curious. You know, ChatGPT, it's terrifying, but you can harness it and utilize it.
And Space for Change or Earth to Mars, they've got their course on ChatGPT and change. And or, you know, I've learned so much by starting a podcast and inviting the smartest people I know to be guests on the podcast and ask them questions that I want to know. So I think there's so much there. Like, I have mixed feelings about certifications, because I think if you're at the very start of your career or you're trying to get into change, I don't think you should be spending $5,000, because you don't know what environment you're going to end up in. And some of the dominant certifications are waterfall based. And what if you end up in an agile? So I think get those transferable skills, get change adjacent. And then when you're actually working in change, you can work out what is the best professional cert for you. But then the flip side of that is, you know, I have hired many change managers in my time as well. So as somebody who hires, Yeah, if I saw someone with, you know, bugger all experience and a pro sci, I'd be like, not sure how that's going to go. But if I saw someone who'd been in the industry for, say, more than 5, 6, 7 years and they hadn't gone and done some sort of formal training, that would be a bit of a red flag, because I would be like, well, where's your commitment to continuous learning? Like, are you just trotting out the same stuff, copy and pasting every time? So again, it doesn't have to be a formal cert, because there are lots of micro credentials. Like, there's Jen Fram and Lena Ross's Agile Change Leadership Institute. So they've got stuff that's self-paced and a bit better. And then, you know, there's Earth to Mars, there's Delta Mash, there's me. I've got some small stuff. So there's a lot of stuff you can do for, yeah, like under $500, and you don't have to take a day off work. So there is that. But then, probably acknowledging that everyone has a different opinion as well, because I know someone who, she's a consulting MD, and she does recommend people go and get a ProSci certification, and she's someone who's gatekeeping hiring. So if she's saying that, yeah, and you want to get into that organization, maybe go do it. But yeah, I do think, and also you can network a lot when you're doing these courses. So in your exactly. cohort, you're going to meet a lot of really interesting people who you will then stay in touch with and form good relationships with. And they, again, they will help you on your journey, and they'll become part of your network. So there's that too.
Yeah, I mean, if I look at the CMI and Jen Zuber at the moment and that CPM course, like, to me, it's just goals to have that time with Jen. I'm like, I will pay the money just to have that time with Jen Zuber.
Yeah.
So exactly.
Daryl Connors, you know, Advanced Trusted Advisor, we're both big fans of Daryl. I think, like, it wasn't a cheap course because it was also priced in American dollars and, you know, RIP the Australian dollar. But you get all this time with Daryl in a small cohort where literally Daryl gives you counseling on your change management. Like, that is priceless. That is absolutely priceless. And you really get to know people on a deeper level. And yeah, like, I know I've been very public about saying Daryl's course really helped me level up my change game as I was going through the process of starting my own consultancy. So it doesn't just stop from when you're going to, you know, analyst to manager, manager to sit, like, I'm still leveling up. And I did say to you before we hit record,
told me,
like,
that,
what am I going to do for the next 25 years? Like, I'm not going to do what I'm doing now.
but you also taught me, and I think it was right as I was embarking on change it and going out on my own, you said to me that success or growth has many trajectories for different people, right? And it's not necessarily linear. That being ahead of change is the goal for everyone. And
no, it wasn't my goal.
Yeah.
But it is something that traditionally, because in the hierarchy, that's what happens after senior change manager or change lead. It's like, oh, you'll be head of change or portfolio change director. But those people, I find they're not actually on the tools as much. And I like being on the tools. And, you know, I looked at people doing that stuff and went, oh, they're in meetings, back-to-back meetings all day, which is something I loathe. I'm not sure it's for me, which is part of the reason I went out on my own, because I was like, well, I'm very ambitious, so I'm going to try something different. But another thing I noticed is some people are really, really good change practitioners, but that doesn't necessarily translate into being a great head of change or change portfolio director, because it's the same thing. They're good at being on the tools, but, you know, it's a different thing around leadership. But if you are good on the tools and you want to be a head of change, then you need to think about developing leadership skills and your management skills, because the role becomes a lot more about that and influencing and upward management than it is about change delivery.
That's a really good point. It's a very different direction to, say, going out and building your own consultancy. On that, one of the things that I find it can be quite difficult for people in change is all the titles and the disparity from one industry to the next. As a solo consultant, like, how do you navigate that? And presumably, I can't imagine that you're kind of particularly title conscious, or, you know, like, how do you manage that in your day-to-day, Tash?
I'm not. I've been in organizations that are very change immature, because I'm finding that's where my clients sit. Because, yeah, larger organizations that have big change practices, they don't really need to go and find a consultant, because they have a lot of people. And also they have a panel of services providers that they can call on anytime they need a contractor. So it would have to, although having said that, I have done a little bit of niche work where there is a niche requirement. So I was surprised. But yeah, I'm operating in, you know, scaling startups are one. disability services. I've had 3 disability services clients in the last 18 months because that's being quite, it's being disrupted by everything that's happening with the NDIS and Royal Commissions into NDIS and all that sort of stuff. And what I've found is because I've sometimes been the first person in the org, people have just said, this is Tash, she's our change manager. And I don't care because there is no hire, there are no other people. Whereas if I went to NAB, and I was called a change analyst, I probably might not be too happy about that because they have all the different levels and the hierarchies and also that dictates what your rate is. So I wouldn't want to.
That's a really good lesson for people who are, particularly if someone's been in financial services as a change lead, and then they're looking out into a market where there's very little in financial services and they're trying to look at a comparable role, you know, say they're interviewing it. In utilities, then it might be that you suddenly get called a change manager, but you can feel from the remit and the fact that there's no one above you in change that it's still a senior level role.
I've had some job titles of change manager where I've been dealing with, you know, board, CEO and C-suite, and I'm just, you know, I shouldn't say just the chat, but people are saying, but that's because they don't, like, why would they, or they have sometimes described me as a consultant, but again, I'm not there to have an ego and make people call me senior change consultant. Like, I'm there to do the job. So yeah, I think when you're in those sorts of environments, you need to look at what are the tasks that you're being asked to do. And if it looks really, really interesting, and again, looks like it's going to level you up, then absolutely consider it. Because yeah, some of the most rewarding, you know, career highlight work that I've done, maybe I didn't have a senior title and maybe I wasn't getting paid the absolute top of the market rate. Because yeah, it's when you're working with not-for-profits and things like that, the rates are a bit lower. But if you have the opportunity and you're in a fine, well, they usually pay okay. Like, it's not like going halves, but yeah, if you can have that opportunity to do some really, really fantastic work, especially, you know, where organizations are a bit smaller. Like, if you're in a large organization like a Telstra or an ANZ, there's a lot of levels between people carrying out change projects and the C-suite. So even your project sponsor could be several levels above you. Whereas if you're in a smaller organization, you will be like talking to the CEO and their leadership team regularly, and it won't be as much of an issue getting people's time. So it can be a lot more fun and exciting to go into and play in some of those spaces, even though you may not get the remuneration or the kudos with a fancy job title, if that makes sense.
What about specializing? So for you, we talk about being broad and, you know, following what comes up and being playful at the start of your career. But you are known as an agile guru. You've got, you know, quite a lot of offering in this space in terms of workshops and courses and your much awaited book. Do you recommend, once you get into your stride and you're in a senior role, that you kind of do lean in to specialize?
Yeah. I mean, the agile thing, I think about 2018, I realized, oh, I've actually had quite a lot of experience in this space, and I've had the opportunity to experiment and try out a number of tools and techniques that I've read about in books and I've found out, you know, online or in workshops like Jason Little's Lean Change. I think he had a 1-day workshop that I did back in 2015, maybe, that was total game changer. And I kind of came to the realization, yeah, other people haven't had those opportunities. So then I made the decision to lean really hard into it. But I was also feeling very much at home in agile spaces. Like, I get along really well with agile people. I find that they're very welcoming. They have some interesting conversations in their spaces, and sometimes change, like, you know, when I attend some of the more formal change events by very well-established organizations, I feel like they're saying the same stuff sometimes. And that's actually one of the reasons I started my podcast too, because I thought, I have a lot of ideas and I know some people that are doing really interesting work, but I'm not seeing it being talked about in these more formal settings, which I think that's all kind of changed now. But also, and that's probably another tip around branding, like, if you have something to say about change, like, start saying it, whether you want to write a blog or share someone's article with some thoughts, like, start building a little network and a brand for yourself. I would probably caveat that with saying, maybe don't use ChatGPT to generate your content as a change person, because I just think when one of our core skills is communication, we can tell, and it's not a very good look. But another thing, I'll finish off my thoughts on specialization first, Yeah, you can become highly specialized, but then I'm not just the agile change person. So I've got, you know, multiple facets, because I've got digital and technology transformation, which is often where, you know, that can often be a bread and butter type thing, because sometimes agile seems to be in and out of fashion. And, you know, sometimes there's a lot of interest and sometimes it drops off. So there's agile, there's digital transformation, there's building people's change capability. That's kind of what started the journey. And then there's also disruptive strategic change. There's new operating models. So yeah, when you can do all of these things, but I guess I've been in the industry for about 15 years, so it does take time. You can't have all of that in your first couple of years. But then there's change managers out there who they only do workday implementations, and they have a crew that they bring with them, and they just go from workday implementation to workday implementation, and they seem to do really well. And, you know, they know everything there is to know about workday. Same with SAP. They just do SAP, which is completely fine. I think if there's something you really like, if you see opportunity there and you see that maybe not a lot of other people are doing it, get in there. But you need to realize it could take a while for that work to come to fruition. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And actually, one of the things that we haven't covered that you and I have spoken to at length in the past about is that consulting allows you in your early career, again, to yes. have that breadth of the variety, and also sometimes just having to fake it until you make it and cope when thrown into the lion's den almost. And that is another thing that is almost, I would say, as beneficial to your career as any cert or any training, because that is, it's experience, right? But it's experience, and it gives you access to all these templates and glossy artifacts,
knowledge share, and again,
and
like
people.
Yeah, so I think most people, listeners of my podcast, know that I moved to Melbourne to take up an opportunity as an analyst with Accenture, and I really wanted to kickstart my career because I'm from South Australia, which, just, you know, it's a smaller, I think when you're from anywhere that's not Melbourne or Sydney, you do have a thought at some point that, you know, if I really want to make this career, like, you need to go where the work is. So I knew I was going to have to move to the eastern states, maybe Canberra, if I wanted to work in government. So yeah, I came over all guns blazing, and yeah, they throw you in at the deep end, you work, but you have the opportunity to work on some really interesting and amazing projects. It's a very high performance culture, so you are working with other people who are also really career focused and focused on doing a good job. Like, there are no passengers and no places to hide in companies like that. And you have the opportunity to work on those really large scale transformations, because a lot of those big transformations the big consulting houses do partner with clients. So I did have the opportunity to work on some really big projects. And yeah, you're working with, you know, the people who are the partners or the MDs or the senior managers, they are often very experienced people, and you do get a lot of training and coaching. Like, I was sent to business analyst school, you know, for 2 weeks. Like, you get, there's a lot, you could have 2 weeks of online training before they even allow you to be anywhere near. No, it was 2 weeks of facilitated group training, actually, before you're allowed to be anywhere near a client. So, and there's a really consistent feedback cycle. So I learned so much about how to be a consultant and how, you know, certain things that, yeah, again, they take a lot of other people a long time. Like, I would say 2 years in consulting is like 5 years out in industry. And then it positioned me to go out contracting, because I didn't know about contracting before I came over here. I was like, what, these people make what? And, you know, like, I was like, oh, I reckon I could do that. So I did, right? You know, and a lot of people, and, you know, some people who I started with on that day in, you know, January 2009, they are still at Accenture and they are, you know, MDs, and other people have gone on to do a lot of really varied and different things with their career, and lots of people have specializations now. But yeah, like, it's such a, you know, and yeah, like, a lot of people, yeah, you could make money somewhere else, more money somewhere else. You probably will work a lot of hours, but I was happy to do that, and I definitely would do it again, and I would definitely recommend other people do it. I mean, if it's not for somebody who's lazy, doesn't want to work, but then
they might not be listening to this
podcast, either of our podcasts anyway.
No, no. But if you're lazy and you don't want to work, then you're going to struggle to level up anyway. Because that's actually another thing that's just come to mind about leveling up is consider taking on some additional duties. Like, you might not necessarily get paid for them, and at some point you're going to have to say, okay, well, but yeah, you might be able to take on, and yes, it will involve working harder, but it will position you for the next role. So you might not be getting the pay bump now or the new, you know, the promotion and the job title, but it'll set you up for the next one. Because a lot of people go, well, I'm not doing that because I'm an analyst and blah, 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 blah. But then you see some analysts who are like basically, you know, running their whole project, and it's like, well, this one's, you know, they're clearly ready to make the jump. So again, like, don't be afraid of hard work. Obviously, there's a balance between being taken advantage of, and probably following on from that as well, I think you've got to really speak up and ask for what you want. So you can say, I would like, you know, are there any stretch opportunities for me?
Yeah, nice.
Because
yeah.
I want to be a change manager within the year. But you can't expect anyone else to manage your career. Like, even, and I see this a lot with people who are perm, they just expect their organization to do it. And it's like, look, we know most people don't have budget for training. You're probably going to have to pay for your own training. So don't blame it on the company that you work for, because they're not going to do it. Because it is really, really hard to get that sort of, you know, funding for the people. Like, we know it's tough out there. But yeah, like, and you have to ask for what you want and say, this is what I want to do. And this is, you know, and ask, how do I get there? What development do I need to do? So yeah, you do need to be quite vocal about asking for what you want.
And that's a really interesting point, because Amrik Kabul, who is on my podcast, who's in C-suite at Avenue Bank, he said something along the same lines about just throwing yourself sometimes out of your swim lane and like putting your hand up. But then two things happen, like you get recognized for doing that and like taking on the extra work. But also sometimes you find that that work is actually more aligned to you anyway. And so coincidentally, it's like the universe finds you your happy place, and then you kind of can lean into that and start swimming over there.
That's how I got into change. Yeah. Cause I was a baby analyst who was still learning the basics of being an analyst, like running requirements. And, you know, I ended up being good at it, I think, by the end. But yeah, I was adding a lot of value on projects, helping people organize and run training, you know, writing communications, writing quick reference guides, because I'd done a lot of training and coaching in, you know, previous roles. And then I realized, oh, this is a thing. Like, not that I'm saying that change is just comms and training, we all know it's not, but, you know, I was doing a lot of that stuff because I was working with highly technical people. And I was like, oh yeah, I'm adding heaps of value here by, you know, helping with the training and helping with all of the post-implementation support and hypercare, because I was able to understand concepts and explain them in a way that was really easy to understand. And that's a skill. So yeah, then I got to a crossroads, because, and again, like a traditional career progression for a BA is to become a project manager, which again, I'm not sure that really works, because great BAs are usually quite introverted and very analytical and very technical, and project managers like need to be different. So that's another one that sometimes doesn't work. But I was like, oh, I could be a project manager, I could be a change manager. So I decided to, like, I dipped my toe into change, and then I decided to stay there, and I haven't looked back.
I love that. I think that that's a really, it tells a tale though of just like saying yes as well. And I think that is the overarching theme almost in this, is kind of be playful, say yes, put yourself forward.
Yeah, maybe get out of your own way a little bit. Because I know, again, early in my career, I thought I knew what was best for me and what I wanted. And I was so wrong on a number of things. Like, and, you know, that project that I was telling you about where I was adding the value, I initially didn't want to do that. And that was also an ERP implementation. Because, yeah, I was early in my career, like the GFC really kicked off right after I started my job at Accenture and moved to Melbourne. So,
oh, fun.
I know. So there were a lot of like issues around, you know, making sure people were chargeable and not being on the bench. So I ended up, being, because I had been an SAP user, because my uni job, I used to work for BHP Billiton in their procure to pay center, just doing procure to pay stuff in SAP. So I was able to leverage my experience knowing how to use SAP to then helping teach other people how to use SAP. So that's why I was so good, because I was like, oh, here's some shortcuts, because I knew all the shortcuts, even though I wasn't familiar with those particular modules. So yeah, if you can leverage something you've already got, like, and then you can make your way in. But then there were so many ERP implementations at that time because they were the type of project that was still being funded, because a lot of other stuff was on hold, but ERPs weren't. So then I was doing ERPs for a little while, and that was my specialization, which is fine, because they always seem to be happening.
they're always about.
But yeah, for whatever reason, like, I tried to like avoid getting put on that project, and it was so good for me. So I think if you like, when you're at the start of your career, like, you can be a bit dumb about what you think you need, and you don't know what you don't know. So I think going with the flow sometimes can be beneficial, because that ended up being great for my career.
Yeah, I think that's an invaluable lesson.
The
other thing that you and I have spoken about is that obviously in the current market where we record in, is that times have been a bit tougher, and you know, that there are maybe or have been a few less opportunities about. So we are conscious of that. And I think that leveling up is something that you can do in a plethora of ways. And it's not necessarily always taking the next job or, you know, getting getting a pay rise or progressing on a title. It is like building out your skill sets, building out your confidence. Like, it can be soft skills as well as hardcore training. It can be reading a new book. So I think the other piece of leveling up is hustling where you can, you know, with what you've got, being the best. I read a quote somewhere about high performances being the best with who you are, with what you've got. And I think that then is timeless, you know, if you can go into each day with that.
There's not always going to be promotion opportunities being thrown at you. That's very true, because again, like, the market goes, I'm making a little wave thing with my hand, but the market is cyclical and your career is not going to be linear. Like, you're not going to do, I've done a change lead role now. Now I'm going to be a head of change. Like, you are going to, you know, bounce between career highlight stuff and stuff that's maybe a little bit meh, but you just, maybe you're doing it to build a skill, or maybe you're doing it to put food on the table. And there's no shame in doing a role, because you've got to put food on the table, especially when the market's a bit weird, right? So that's another thing. But yeah, there's so many good people out there producing free content that you can consume. And we are two of those people. And then, yeah, affordable things like books. And, you know, even if you are not doing that great, like, you are struggling a bit to, you really want to do a course and you're struggling to afford it, you could reach out to someone and say, hey, because I think a lot of people would be happy to, you know, give you a discount, especially if you're between contracts, or because I'm often happy to do that for people. Or is there something I could do? Is there some free work I could do for you in exchange for a place in your cohort? Like, you could give that a go as well. Because it's ironic that the best time to do study is when you're between roles, but that's when you're not earning money. So you're stressing about money and you don't want to spend it because you don't know when your next paycheck's coming. So I think there are a lot of, and, you know, there's even things like, you can do a Scrum Master on scrum.org. You can do it self-paced and it's only $150 to take the exam. So you don't have to do a multi-$1,000 facilitated course if you are disciplined enough. So there's a lot of ways that you can level up that doesn't mean, and, you know, even you just referred to me as an agile change guru. Like, people only started calling me that maybe in the last year, and I've been leaning hard into it for 5 years, right? So I feel like people are only starting to, just because I don't describe myself as an expert of any, I just, you know, because you can't do that. But yeah, people have only started saying that sort of stuff recently. And it does take a long time. So, and yeah, like, I still go into environments where people are like, who are you? Like, they don't know about my podcast. They don't know about all the things, you know, the content that I put out. Like, I'm just, you know, some random person off the street. So again, like, you've still got to rebuild all of that trust and credibility from the ground. Like, I don't have a magic ticket. And obviously someone's bringing me into that client, but yeah, to everyone else, I'm just no different than, you know, whatever random change manager. But yeah, I think another one is, you know, when you're climbing a mountain, and you're like, oh, I'm walking so slowly because it's really steep or it's really rocky. But then you actually like stop and you turn around and you see how far you've come. Like, work and careers are like that. And yeah, like, you will have highs and lows. But you will think about, well, imagine if I just stayed at X organization and I was still doing that same job from 5 years ago. Wouldn't that be terrible? So
that's so profound.
Well, if you don't try, what is it like Yoda who said, do or do not, there is no try? No, that's the wrong quote. But like you've got it. Oh no, the quote I was looking for, it's the one from Strictly Ballroom, a life lived in fear is a life half lived. Like you've got to have a crack. Otherwise, yeah, you will stay in the same spot. So I think, yeah, there's so much you can do and you may not see the results immediately, but you will get there if you're putting in the work.
Yeah, nice. What will you remember? It's definitely the hard times. Someone said to me once that the hard times aren't necessarily bad for us. And so putting yourself outside of your comfort zone is good, even though it doesn't feel like it.
Yeah, my first few years in Melbourne were really tough, like professionally. I was constantly just in way over my head and what am I doing? but I wouldn't have had it any other way. Yeah.
So if you are someone listening to this and you do feel like that, then do reach out to either of us as well, because there is a tribe and we can both help and connect you with them. So
we're here. Do you have any parting words of guidance?
I have my two questions for you, Tash.
Oh.
As a recruiter in the change space, it would be remiss of me not to ask, what is the one interview question that you've been asked or like to ask to ascertain whether it's a hire or role that you're going to go for?
That's a good question, whether it's a role I'm going to go for. I like it when people ask me, you know, what motivates me and what gets me out of bed in the morning. I recently heard a question that I thought I really liked that I might steal it, where someone asks everyone they interview, what's the worst job you've ever had? Which I think is like a low stakes question in terms of the answer. But it does tell you a lot about the person, but it's not going to, you know, have a wrong answer. But when you told me, you know, this question, I started thinking about it. I immediately thought of red flag questions. So what would be the question that I would get asked that would make me go, oh, I don't know. And the first one is, I think when people ask me about resistance, you know, they go, oh, we've got some problems with resistance to change. I immediately think, what have you done? What have you done wrong? And also I like to ask, you know, how far out are we from go live? Like if they're 4 weeks from go live and they haven't had a change manager, and I just go, oh, red flag.
It's tomorrow.
And another one, and I think I want to share this because this is very relevant to the market we're in at the moment, is I have experienced this so many times where you get put forward and you say what your rate is, and that's communicated quite clearly by the recruiter or hiring manager or, you know, whoever has that conversation with you. And then you interview and you do really well and they come back and say, you're the preferred candidate, but we want to know, they try and see, get, they ask if you would do it for less, and they ask, oh, could you do it lower? Or they say, oh, we don't actually have budget for your rate, but could you, you know, we have budget for $50 a day less or $100 a day less. I think that is a scam. I think they do have the budget because otherwise they would not have agreed to interview you. They are just trying to get you to do it for less. And I think, you know, we need to be mindful that we don't engage in a race to the bottom. Because when we are in a market moment like we're having now, where there is probably lower supply and higher demand, like everybody wants to use this as a reason to drop rates, but we're also in a cost of living crisis.
Yeah. So that's my biggest bugbear.
Yeah. And also as women, because change is female dominated, women are more likely to roll over on this sort of stuff because they're less confident. They're traditionally already getting paid less than men. So they probably, you know, don't feel brave enough to ask for the top of the market. And they tend to have less knowledge of, you know, market rates. So I feel like this sort of behavior from companies directly contributes to the gender pay gap.
I agree.
But I also
do you think on that the same is happening in the current market around project management? Like, have you heard stories?
Yeah. I know a few PMs who have been looking and same thing, like rates are being pushed down. And you know, quite senior and quite experienced, but then what we're seeing at the lower end of the market is there's still such high demand for analysts. Cause again, I think what they're doing is to save money. They're like, well, maybe we'll go and get a more junior resource, but that's another way to level up. Like you could be the junior resource who maybe you're getting, you know, you're a change manager, but really the role you're doing is senior change manager, but you can use it for your next role, right? To get the dollars. but you can do it to get experience. Because, you know, there's a lot of stuff where I see things that are priced at a mid-level change manager that's labeled as, you know, they want a very senior person. And I'm like, well, someone will do it. And it will probably be me from 10 years ago who was trying to level up and was like, yeah, I'll do that.
But it's invaluable advice, I think, in the current market or in any market. Like, your value hasn't diminished, and
correct,
you know, when you're interviewing for a role, what the ask is. And I think it's being savvy with that too. If it's something where you feel like you could do it with maybe one eye open and the other one closed, like, you might be flexible. But I think, you know, you can read from a lot that's out there at the moment. The demands are going to be just as high and they're offering less. And it's a hard conversation to have, but a very worthwhile one.
Yeah, every time that's happened to me, I've said no. And I've only lost the opportunity once, but every other time, you know, they come back and go, okay, yep, that's approved. And I'm like, yep, I thought so. And look, when you say no, you do put yourself at risk of losing the opportunity. So yeah, like, be careful. But in my experience, most of the time, if you're the preferred candidate, you're the person they want. So you actually do have bargaining power, because
So, and also, I think from a career perspective, right, it's not sustainable to go in at a lower rate, because then as soon as the market's paying higher again, then you're more likely to leave that role. You'd be the first to leave.
Because or to feel disengaged because you're being paid less than market and you're feeling a bit annoyed. Yeah.
So it's better to push back now rather than feel like in 3 months' time, you're despondent in that role.
Correct. And we all know it's much harder to negotiate a pay rise or a rate rise than it is to just negotiate that on the way in when they want you. So yeah, be prepared to walk.
And my final question is, what one line or one message would you like to leave ringing in everyone's ears, your message of wisdom?
Yeah, I think it's, again, I'm probably going to lean into change being female dominated. It's completely okay to be ambitious and to have big career goals for yourself and to vocalize and verbalize them to other people. And if anyone tries to neg you or say that maybe it's not realistic, you don't need to listen to those people. Because I had a lot of people telling me, you can't do this and you won't be able to do that. And, you know, like,
don't wear heels.
Yeah, wear heels, don't wear heels. Wear a dress, don't wear a dress. I think as a woman, it's completely valid to have all of those ambitions, and just don't let anyone bring you down.
Wow, that is a very strong message. Kudos to that.
Yeah, we covered a lot of content. Yeah, and again, like, your career is a marathon, it's not a sprint. So just because the market's a bit flat now, there's going to be times where the market is insanely crazy. And you can have your pick of the roles. Like, I've been in, you know, I've had the GFC, the market was flat in the, you know, 2013, 2014. And I was caught up in that. It's flat, you know, it was flat in 2020 because we, like, so it is cyclical. And you are, just because if you're going through some challenges now, like, that's not always going to be the case. And you will have the opportunities and you will, you know, but you will have to work for it and you will have to ask for it.
And I think the good thing is that this podcast will be here to listen to now, and it will be here to listen to in 10 years when it's a high, when it's a low.
Yep.
And you can go through our piece of our pearls of wisdom.
Yeah.
And utilize them. Thank you so much.
I could talk to you all day. Let's do this again.
Nice. Yeah. If anyone's got any subjects that they'd like us to cover, then please give us an excuse to do this again.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, if you guys listen on Apple Podcasts, write us both a review and we'll see you soon.
Ciao.